Starbuck. I didn't need correcting.
Shut up!
Order!
Order! Let's start off as we need to go on.
We can see a better future.
So it's not a competition who can shout the loudest.
Hello, I'm Ashan, and you're listening to the Left Wingers podcast. We're a left-wing political podcast made by activists for activists.
And this week, there's only one thing we can really talk about, and that is the budget. Now, we'll be releasing this episode on Wednesday, which means there's a lot more good stuff to come in the week. Unusually for Parliament, all the juicy stuff is at the end of the week, but this week we're recording at the start of the week, which means we'll be covering the budget, which happened last week. Budget given by Jeremy Hunt. I think we kind of predicted a lot of stuff that would have been in it. Nothing too surprising, in my opinion. The response was, I think, quite decent as well from Starmer, and we're going to be chatting a little bit about that today. So to kick off, Ashan, did you watch the budget?
Yeah, I did catch up with it. I know it's traditionally quite a long speech, so sadly I didn't spend all of the speech watching it. But it was definitely quite boring, I suppose. I think that it was kind of meant to be. They're kind of trying to set themselves up for the next year and try and give that message of, oh, everything's back to normal now. We're not going to do anything crazy. Because if you can recall, the last time we had a budget type thing, shit hit the fan, basically. So that's when they've gone for the strong and stable. But I don't think it's really hit the spot.
Back to strong and stable politics, I completely agree. One of the things that Jeremy Hunt said, which I thought were interesting, one of which was, we managed to avoid recession. And I had to think about why that might be. And recession, of course, is two recessive quarters, which technically he's right. We have avoided recession, just. And there's a theory online as to why, and I'm not sure I believe it, but I do think it's very funny. They credit football fans for basically spending a lot in the economy through drink and whatever for the last basically 7 or 8 months, which has meant the hospitality industry has grown significantly more than projected because England did so well in the World Cup, or better than predicted, they'd say. And as a result, people drink pints. That is more money, more people spending. And as a result, they avoided two successive recessive quarters, which I think is very funny if true. I don't know how you can actually prove that, but I do think, I'd imagine in kind of spending, you wouldn't expect there to be the bump that there would have been for the Qatar World Cup. But to be fair, I was actually in the pub watching a couple of the games, and most of my friends were as well. And I don't think I would have been in the pub watching those games.
Yeah, anecdotally as well, I do a bit of part-time work, and I have noticed it's been significantly busier than this time last year. I'm not sure why. But I don't know if you're big horse racing people, anyone listening. No, I'm not, but if you are, I know for Cheltenham, Bristol was absolutely heaving, which was much more than last year, especially. So I think there is maybe an argument that people are going even more back out than since the pandemic, but who knows. And actually, the point is still a bit moot because we only barely just avoided, like 0.1% or something ridiculous. So it's not exactly, it's a bit of a trying to polish a bit of a turd, I think, is the...
Yeah, it's nothing to write home about, but I thought it was interesting when Hunt started his speech, he kind of took credit for the fact that they're the reason that we've avoided two recessive quarters. Forgetting, of course, the fact that we had a recessive quarter was due to the fact that Liz Truss and the kamikaze budget, that was just completely a disaster. So I feel like it's a little bit unfair to fill the milk, clean half of it up, and then say there was never a problem in the first place. When it kind of, you spilt the milk, you kind of, you're the problem.
Going the other way, they also, I don't know if you read or if anyone has heard, a lot of the forecasts they used were quite optimistic. Compared to what people like the IMF are saying, who are suggesting that we're not going to have as much growth as Jeremy Hunt has predicted for. And that's quite interesting because I'm not sure, should the economy perform worse than what Jeremy Hunt wants, that could throw another spanner in the works, especially with a budget before election coming up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's actually one of the points I wanted to raise. It's so clear to me now, and I think anyone who watched that budget could tell you. Now, we didn't think there was going to be one. We wouldn't put money on it. We've never said in the Left Wingers that we think 2023 is a general election year, but I think that budget has definitely proven it. And I now can't see them going in May 24 either, purely because of what they've put down is so uninspired. It's just not a pre-election budget. A couple of things away, One of the things I think you take away is like the avoidance of recession combined with the what is now a banking crisis as of Monday morning. But, you know, last week was the Silicon Valley bank collapse. And now we've got obviously the
Credit Suisse.
There could have been a real problem for a lot of, I think it's 30,000 small businesses have accounts in Silicon Valley in the UK. And there's no way we could have, the economy is already on its knees. The public services are already on its knees. And now you're telling me that 300 businesses can't access their current accounts. I don't know what role they had to play in that, but I think credit where credit's due, they sort that out. Now we speak on, you know, Monday afternoon, Credit Suisse is having major problems and we'll be able to see. Hopefully they can sort that out as well.
Yeah, they've been bought out by UBS, is it, as of this morning, which is their biggest rival in Switzerland. Here's hoping that that does something to stabilise the markets. But I know a lot of people are concerned from Europe to China and obviously in the US. It'll be interesting to see how that develops. I feel like it's not my area of expertise, but I know people who are very much interested in it. And in all the group chats today, it's been a bit, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen. Ooh, I'm quite scared. Or this is nerve-wracking. So
it definitely reminds me of 2008. I'm getting like a little bit of those feelings come back again. I mean, we'll have to see, you know, shout out to Gordon Brown for the work he did after that recession. We'll have to see if any of it's pulled off and if it's going to work this time around. But I'm definitely getting, there are similar things. And what I actually thought was quite interesting was I was listening to the radio, Silicon Valley bank collapse. And it's not, nobody actually went to Silicon Valley to a bank branch online to their online accounts. So they knew that they were in trouble when the site went down, because if you imagine like a WhatsApp goes around or a tweet goes around and then the site goes down because 30,000 people log on and take out all their funds. If you could imagine 30,000 people had a really tough weekend, or 30,000 businesses with one or two business managers, CEOs, CFOs trying to get all this money out. And I actually just kind of thought, I don't know if you remember, Sean, the Northern Rock when they collapsed and there were like queues around the block.
Yeah. One of the ones that ring a bell. And RBS, I think.
Briefly. And yeah, and I remember like the queues all around the block, people waiting to get out of their cash. And they said, actually, that's not the case this time. No one actually went into the banks because everyone just had it all online. I thought, actually, obviously they're different and there are similarities, but a major difference is the fact that nobody actually panicked and then went to a store. They all just logged on their phones immediately and withdrew their money, and the site went down as a result of it, which I actually think is quite interesting. Basically, the question really, if you've 2 million people, for example, have a Barclays current account and the site goes down and the stock collapses, I think that's a real question.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a danger, but it's also, I think you alluded to it, also a bit of a privilege in the fact that not everyone can get in and take their money back. I suppose you can stop the rot if you realise there's a spike in traffic. But another thing that's changed from 2008, I know we're talking about similarities, but the sort of axis of banking is also a bit more spread out throughout the world. So it's not just all in New York or London or Frankfurt. There's now China, who are playing a big role, especially in Switzerland. I think one of the more notable investors in Credit Suisse was the Saudis. And if they hadn't have stepped in a few years ago, this situation could be a lot worse now than it is. So there's definitely a bit more protection, as well as the sort of reforms made post 2008. Not that they went far enough, in my opinion, but they definitely have got us somewhere to make it a little bit safer and more regulated.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And just to kind of pull back to our conversation about the budget, I thought Hunt's speech was very measured, nothing in it that was too, the fact that you can now, as of I think a few weeks' time, you can buy a pint cheaper in a pub than you should be able to at a supermarket, I think is really interesting. I wonder whether that will draw people into the pubs, because I feel like that's a sector that definitely needs help. And I personally am not convinced that you want to take people from the supermarkets and put them into the pubs, because I think if you're buying beer for a supermarket and if you're going to a pub, it's two different things. One of which is a social occasion on your couch, and the other one is the social occasion out and about. And I'd be interested to see if pub as a result, like we'll find out in the next 3 or 4 months if it's worked. But I think there needs to be a lot more done to stimulate that part of the economy.
Yeah, I think it might be a bit short-sighted. I don't think the biggest factor affecting particularly independent bars and pubs is the direct duty on beer or wine or whatever. It does tend to be exorbitant rents, low footfall due to other factors as well. So it'd be interesting to see if he puts that into a proper strategy to deal with sort of collapsing high streets as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's definitely a lot of One of the things actually I thought was really good was childcare. So this was spoken about before the budget. Annoyingly, and you know, a lot of old Labour people say back in the day, you would never ever speak about a budget. You'd never brief a budget. You'd never leak a budget before the budget was announced. Nowadays, this is not the case. A lot of things are said the week before, the Sunday before, which I think that's just a change in the times. I'm not too sure you can keep things for secret very long anymore unless they really are home affairs or, you know, something of that nature. I'm fascinated. The childcare thing is very good in that they've identified it as a huge problem. We've consistently said on the show, and I especially on the show have said, childcare and housing are two massive problems that the UK has. And we've also said transport, there are multiple problems, but childcare has been a problem for a very long time, and it affects tens of millions of people up and down the country that are struggling. And this is a start in fixing the problem, and it's probably the most interventionist policy there has been in a while, but I'm not too sure it's anywhere near enough.
No, I don't. I think it's interesting the way they framed it. I don't know the exact numbers, but if you're earning a certain threshold as a person, as an individual parent, you get access to these childcare hours. But if as a family, two parents, you're earning more, you can actually get access to the hours. You get access to more hours compared to if you're individually earning less, if that makes sense. So it's a very strange way they framed it. But also it is a good thing for Labour. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but it does show that they're hearing Bridget Phillipson, for example,'s ideas and trying to implement their own versions of them. I would say, and I know you would say not as well, but at least it's sort of, they're recognising that people are listening to us and we should try and change our way as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I was sitting in Jeremy Hunt's shoes and I could in any way afford it, I would just bring back a version of Sure Start and just rename it something else and have that kind of very early childcare. I have a huge problem with the idea of work not paying, which I fundamentally believe is wrong in a capitalist society. And if, for example, you take home £2,100 a month, but your childcare is £1,700, there is literally no point you going to work. And as a result, if you think about all the money you spend on your way to work, if you think about the taxes, if you think about business, if you think about other jobs it creates, I'm not convinced that, quite rightly, we'll say, well, I'll stay at home instead, because there's no point me after taxes taking them £300 or £400 a month if so much is going into childcare. And maybe they have to increase the supply side. Maybe that just means you have to hire a bunch of childminders. I don't know what it means. But I'm just not, this idea, especially with benefits, I find as well, if it doesn't pay to actually go to work, how can you incentivize people to go to work? And we have a huge number of people that are out of work, not because they're not fit to work, but because they just don't have jobs. And I find that to be quite a challenging thing. And it's a shame, really, because a lot of, and I mean, this is something we kind of speak about a lot, but I think housing and childcare are two huge issues that anyone between, I think, it kind of impacts anyone who has children or is thinking about having children. And that, as time will go on, that'll be more and more and more people of solution. But I think we now need, from this top Lotto office, there now needs to be a huge emphasis on fixing childcare and an affordable plan that will help the majority of people. And then I'd be interested to see what happens off the back of that. So one of the things I thought was interesting was the hour that Rachel Reeves did with Ian Dale on LBC the day before the budget. I don't know if you caught it, Sean.
Yeah, I didn't.
So one of the things she said, which I thought was really interesting, was Keir Starmer actually delivers the response to the budget. So the Chancellor delivers the budget and then the Leader of the Opposition delivers the response. But because they don't know what's going to be in the budget, they have a WhatsApp group, which I think is hilarious. This is government by WhatsApp part two of Keir's team, the top team, Rachel's top team, and then Pat McFadden, who's chief secretary to the Treasury. And they're all in a WhatsApp group together, and they've got prepared lines about what they think can be in the budget, but it's edited in real time.
Oh, wow.
So they're literally texting each other being like, take on page 7, take out line 5, on page 9, add in paragraph 6. It's a living document that's essentially it's purely as the budget goes on. And I do realise, obviously, you know, the Treasury is a huge department. And then the opposition's office, there's like 10 people in a WhatsApp group. I think it's just very funny how different the Leader of the Opposition is treated to the Prime Minister and kind of the division of Labour there. I kind of thought that was quite interesting. I didn't know that it was so... I knew a lot of the things was done off the cuff, But I didn't actually know that they don't know, like, that the leader opposition doesn't actually know what he's going to say when he sits down for that parliamentary session.
But when I listened to his speech back, it did seem very pre-prepared, as in prepared, I should say. It wasn't sort of traditionally what it's supposed to be off the cuff. As you said, he hears it and responds because obviously it's not briefed. But it did feel like he was reading off a script that he knew what was already going to come. And I know that's kind of the way it is now, but it's kind of a bit sad. It'd be kind of interesting to see if they went back to doing it. Because realistically, people watching it are watching it who are quite politically involved already. No one's watching and going, oh, the budget's today. I always watch this once a year. And I want to find out.
Twice a year.
Yeah, twice a year, whatever. I always watch this. Let me find out what's going on. But it is just watched by people who are really interested or journalists. So I don't understand the need for it to be so pre-prepared. But I guess that's the way it is. Also, I've got one question. I saw traditionally, well, before 1996, every chancellor got to have an alcoholic drink. It's the only time I think a minister or someone in the House of Commons can have a drink while they're speaking or probably while they're sitting as well. What would your, if you were the chancellor giving a speech?
Oh, easy.
It has to be something like quite, it'd be weird if you had a pint, but what would be your like go-to drink?
I don't think you could have a pint of Guinness. I don't think like, that would be like my, I think that would be a little, I don't know, unless you could find something, unless you were doing unless one of your policies was about Guinness, I don't think that you could realistically get away with that because then it'd be like a budget sponsored by Guinness. I think the headlines write themselves when you go down that. But what I do is if I was, if there was a distillery in my patch, if I was an MP and there was a distillery in my patch, I'd have either gin or whiskey.
Just gin or whiskey? No mixer? Just.
I can't do gin straight, but I can do whiskey straight as long as it's with like an ice or two. Yes. And I think that would be relatively easy. You're too stressed out on budget day. You just want a little, something, You don't want anything massive. So I'd have to, I think with the gin, you'd have to pick like a lemonade, but that would have to be something regional, or it'd have to be like an old classic. You'd have to tie it in, I think, to maybe like a back to basics policy or tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime, whatever that is. I think that would be quite fun and interesting if you had like R White's lemonade with a tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime budget. I think that would be very, very funny. But a whiskey, you want something in your patch. So if there was a brewery or a microbrewery or a distillery in your region or in your patch, or in a place that you're trying to win, so look at those red wall seats, that's what I'd go for.
Okay, so aside from being the cynical politician you are, what would you go for?
Whiskey, definitely.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Perhaps. What about you, Sean?
That's what I would say. I'd say you have to look like you're very classy as a chancellor. But I'm not. All chancellors, I feel like the prime minister can be very, like, showboaty or flashy, you know, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, that combination, or Sajid Javid and Boris Johnson, I suppose, you know, that combination of one of them is a bit austere and the other one's a
Blair bit Brown.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'd go for. Something very austere.
Yeah, but like I think everyone can forgive you. Everyone can forgive whatever you drink. I feel like on this day, you just get a pass.
Yeah. No, I think it depends on if it was like economic turmoil and I have to read a very, very dour budget where I'm like saying it's not looking good, guys, I'd have something like very strong and bitter. But if it was like a happy budget, like we've been in record growth, record investment, it'd be something happy, like a gin and tonic or something, or like a Pimm's if it's like a random emergency spring one or something.
That would be really good. I thought you were going to say like blue WKD. That's what I thought.
Oh, God.
If we were doing really, really well, I'd have a blue WKD.
Yeah. I feel like I would, like the Prime Minister should sack.
Or an Alco Pop. No, but you'd have to brief it out in advance because people would, if you like had a really serious drink, it'd be like, Chancellor gets the budget. Your economy is so bad that even the chances having a bev is not, you know, it's not the line that you want.
You have multiple drinks, it's that bad. Get to the end of the speech.
Do you know what I highly rate? Even in the kamikaze budget, if he had just bought out a bottle of whiskey from under the table and it just poured it out for himself and then offered it around, like, I'd be devastated with the budget, but I'd be overjoyed with that. And then that's what all the headlines would be about. And I mean, you'd have to resign because people would think you're an alcoholic. But it would be very funny for like that hour and a half. And then you'd be like the chancellor that did that. And then you could announce a little sponsorship deal afterwards with the whiskey of your choice. People should get in touch. Please get in touch with what your drink would be. I've heard some really, really funny ones.
So have you worked in House of Parliament, obviously. Have you had the Speaker's whiskey?
I have bottle of it at home. I've never opened it, but I've got a bottle at home.
Oh, yep. Wow. Well, that's what I thought when you said a sponsored whiskey.
Well, no, because you can get, you know, I know David Cameron, his favourite whiskey is Talasca, which is up in Scotland, which was one of his father invested in that brewery. But it was one of the seats the Conservatives tried to win, many, many moons ago. And things of that nature, where it just kind of some kind of link to you, your family or your home. I think it's quite funny. Or alternatively, if there's a really good, I think there's a beer, there used to be a beer back in the day called Spitfire.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're doing defence spending, you'd have to have that. Like, just something that's got it's got to tie in with whatever it is that you're saying, which I think would be very, very funny. So that would be mine. But Leftwingers, get in touch. Let us know what yours would be. Are you a flavoured WKD alcopop person, or are you just straight vodka? Every answer is allowed, but tequila. Let us know what you think.
What if there's a Mexican trade deal, though? Amazing Mexican trade deal. It has to be tequila.
It's brilliant.
That would be the front line of your budget, but maybe it's particularly good.
And you just start with a shot, and then you're like, right, crack on.
Get a mariachi band out behind.
That'd be really good. What a lot of people don't know as well is up until 1996, there was a top hat that used to be, I don't know if you know this, Sean, it was thrown around Parliament. So we'd thrown that in House of Commons, the actual chamber, and people would only speak when you had the hat. So,
If it was a point of order.
I believe so. Yeah, but you had to like chuck it about the place. And it's like that's just that kind of like fun element that I think my drink would bring back into. Luckily, I'm never going to be Chancellor, so that's not a problem I have to worry about. Extra points for Rachel Reeves if her first budget next year she gets a Bev. I'd love to know. I'd actually just adore to know what her drink would be.
What do you think it would be if it was like a.
Something super sensible. That woman is like a bank manager. If you're going to Lloyd's and getting a like and getting a loan for your mortgage application, she looks like the woman that would grant you a loan.
Yeah, like a small
doesn't glass she? Doesn't she? Yeah. She's like a small, like something really like,
yeah, really like a dash shitty. Of soda just to like take the edge off.
And like it'd be a wine spritzer. Like it just wouldn't be a big. It just wouldn't be a thing. It'd be very relaxed. She's from Leeds. I imagine there's something. There's definitely kind of a Leeds drink that you could probably get in there. Unless you were kind of announcing like a cut on wine duty, in which case I think you'd have to go with her. I wonder if she's a red or white person, but maybe we'll work on one day. Maybe we can find out.
One final headline from the budget was the Chancellor's plan to get rid of the pension limit. So the amount that people can pay into their pension, which is roughly just over £1 million, has now been lifted. And the idea behind that, supposedly, is that it stops people who are working very high up professions, mainly doctors, I think this is aimed at in this case, from retiring early because they can no longer put any money aside anymore or any more money aside. So the whole idea is that giving them the allowance to put in more will hopefully allow them to stay because they can keep on saving and have a better retirement. What do you think about that, Kathleen? Because I know a lot of people going, it's very universalist. It's sort of giving money back to the 1%. But at the same time, we do need more doctors back. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we do. We do definitely need more doctors and we need to retain the ones that we have. But I think there are a lot of doctors, especially junior doctors, who have a better quality of life and have higher salaries in Australia or English speaking places around the world. And once they're qualified, there's very little incentive for them to stay here. And I think that's number one problem you need to address. Number two problem you need to address, in my opinion, is to have some kind of NHS workforce retention plan, which I don't think the government currently has. And then I think number three is to increase the number of medical schools that take medical students, because there's only a certain number. You can only ever produce a certain number of doctors per year on the outcome of, you know, you have 1,000, you offer 1,000 places or 10,000 places. I would extend that cap because we just need more of them. And, you know, that will solve the problem in 7 years' time. But I think you have to start making the decisions now. I'd also lower the ask for what students have to get into medical school, because I'd have them do an extra year to just bring them up to the same level that everyone else has. And I know it would be more expensive for those students, but I think it's completely ridiculous on one side of the scale to have a lack of doctors and a lack of medical knowledge, and on the other hand to have these, you know, 17, 18 year old kids missing out by what is 2 or 3% on an exam. I think that's completely ridiculous. If you have young people that want to go into medicine, you can, and if you train them properly, and if you, even if you put them through an extra year, I think that there'd still be people that would want to do that. I think that's how you'd solve one of the problems that I think doctors have. I also think, as we said earlier, the problems in this country are so diverse, they're, you know, spread out, but in my opinion, it's transport, housing and childcare. And I think they've done a little bit on childcare. I haven't seen anything on housing really, and I haven't really seen anything on transport. So those would be the three or four things that I'd get on SARP. But I also know that Conservative voters are usually older, so maybe that's just playing to the base.
No, it's true.
I think the pensions idea is really interesting, because I think young people, I don't think about my pension really. It's not something I've ever really thought about in tech, but it's not something that's front of mind. And I also think the way our generation, the side hustle generation, the 18 months and I'm out, moving to a different thing generation, the gap year generation, is going to have a different, the end of work looks like for them. I can't imagine a member of my family retired last year, and they just got up in the morning. They literally went to work one day and then the next day got up and did nothing.
Yeah. I don't think that's what people do these days, especially with the, what I imagine by the time we're retiring, the age will be even higher than it is now anyway. So
people will live longer, the retirement age will be more, it will be harder to retire, and then I question really whether I'd want to, and what retirement would look like. And I find having too much time on my hands to be a huge problem anyway.
It fits a little bit into the childcare thing, where it's a changing nature of families and communities as well, and not people aren't going to be staying, well, the trend is that people don't tend to stay in the same place anymore as they used to, maybe 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that changes the fact, if you want to settle down and live the last 20 years of your life in one place, looking after maybe your grandchildren or spending the same amount of time with the same friends. But so it's really difficult, but we'll see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not something that I think our generation has thought about, and I can't imagine retiring as it is now will be the same when we get around to it. Yeah. But until then, that's all we've got time for. We might, depends on what happens this week and depends on what happens this afternoon when you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on Wednesday. But we might be doing a double episode this week. It depends on what our dear former leader, Boris Johnson, has to say to the Privileged Committee, if he even turns up at all. But if anything exciting happens, we'll definitely be reporting on it. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. We appreciate you listening. All we ask is that you share it to two or three of your friends. Word of mouth is our strongest ally. That means downloading it, that means favouriting, that means subscribing so you get our notifications and you get told when our next episodes come out. That means following us on Twitter and letting us know what you think. We'd love to know what your drink of choice is for your budget, if you ever could give one. All answers accepted, bar tequila, unless you've got a Mexico trade deal. I think we covered that in the podcast. I think I'm right to say that. Love to know what you guys would think. But for now, there's only one thing left to say. I'm going to push over to Rashant to say it.
Keep whinging about blue WKDs, and we'll see you next week.